Hello, and welcome to the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. I'm your host, David Hirschman. On this podcast, we're going to dive deep into everything that's happening in the world's burgeoning ocean economy. The show will hit on a wide variety of topics related to the companies innovating in and around the ocean. We'll talk about exciting innovations in the worlds of boat building, commercial fishing, and undersea mapping. We'll dig into the global offshore wind industry, the latest and greatest technologies being developed by defense contractors, and the rise of so-called smart bays. We'll talk to submarine manufacturers, experts in the field of advanced composites, and even oyster farmers. And we'll talk to the people who make navigational systems for U.S. Navy warships, as well as the people who work the seas to package and sell high-end artisanal salt. The sheer volume of business models currently thriving in the blue economy cluster is huge, and the same goes for the stories that come with them. But before we get ahead of ourselves, we're using this first episode to take a step back and answer a few of the simple questions. What exactly is the blue economy, and why is it important? To help us answer these questions, we sat down with Bruce Katz, a nationally renowned urbanist with New Localism Advisors, a consulting group he co-founded. Bruce is a graduate of Brown University and Yale Law School. He had a stint as a visiting professor at the London School of Economics, and recently served as the Brookings Institution's first-ever Centennial Scholar. Bruce has built a career on his ability to study economic climates and figure out what works and what doesn't. He works with leaders in public, private, and civic sectors across the country to implement comprehensive policy-driven plans that help create or take advantage of competitive opportunities. He's kind of like an interior designer or a personal stylist, only for economic development. He takes an objective look at what you have and shows you how you can make it better. We wanted to talk to Bruce because he and his team recently worked with the state of Rhode Island to develop a series of policy initiatives to help the state continue its economic momentum. And a large piece of Bruce's findings were in the blue economy space. In our conversation, Bruce talked about his definition of the global blue economy, and he touched on a number of examples of states, regions, or countries who are proving to be early movers in this burgeoning cluster. Most importantly, he talked about how all of these incredibly diverse business models in the ocean economy can work together. A couple months ago, before I started working on this podcast, I was floored by a prediction which estimated that by 2030, the global blue economy would be worth $3 trillion in economic impact and support some 40 million jobs worldwide. I mentioned these numbers to Bruce, and he said those numbers are wrong. He said they'd be much higher. You're listening to the Blue Economy Podcast, presented by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. Coming up, our interview with Bruce Katz, a founding partner with New Localism Advisors. But first, the music. So welcome, Bruce. Happy to have you on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I wanted to focus today on some of the economic prescriptions from your upcoming report. And in particular, the report's suggestion that Rhode Island should focus on becoming a hub for ocean tech. But first, just give us a little bit of background on your career and kind of your work at Brookings and kind of how you got to here.
So I actually started in the federal government. I was counsel and then chief of staff at the housing subcommittee in the U.S. Senate, and then I was chief of staff at HUD. And so I left after 10 years in the federal government to found a center on cities, ultimately a metropolitan policy program at Brookings. And over the years, we had an intense focus on what makes city and metropolitan economies or city-state economies like Rhode Island tick and prosper. And a lot of it is around this issue of your innovation assets that you can leverage and commercialize and expand and find your niche in this ever-changing global economy.
So let's just take the lens way back and talk a little bit about what blue tech actually means. You know, for the purposes of this podcast, we've been using a pretty broad definition, including things like offshore wind, but also tech in the shipping industry, undersea robotics, smart ports, fishing tech, and also sort of all the ways that technology and the oceans deal with climate change. But I'd love to hear the kind of the parameters of how you think of blue tech and how the kind of your report addresses it.
Well, I think the definition of the blue economy writ large is frankly still in evolution. I was involved in an effort at Brookings in 2012 with McKinsey to define the clean green economy, and because we clearly saw that that's where things were headed. And that took about a year and a half to define, and it covered multiple sectors. Actually, one of the biggest sectors in the United States was mass transit workers, interestingly enough. And with a lot of these emerging sectors around both traditional industries like maritime or defense or fishing, or new sectors like coastal management and coastal resilience, environmental remediation in the oceans. What you find is that it usually takes the data and the framing a bunch of time to catch up with what's happening in the world, right? Because we tend to define things in these vertical, compartmentalized, you know, segments, and they don't quite reflect like what's happening in the real world. So in my view, there actually is no a definition of the blue economy or blue tech as a cut across in the blue economy that exists out there that would enable, whether it's Rhode Island or Rotterdam or San Diego or any other emerging hubs in the world, to say, here's our niche, you know, here's where we're best in class, here's where we're emerging, and here's where we have no hope for engaging. And so in a way, what we're doing, and URI, by the way, is doing some phenomenal work on this, we're piecing together across what would be obvious sectors or subclusters of the blue economy and trying to ascertain what Rhode Island's position is, whether it's shipbuilding and shipping, whether it's defense-oriented work, whether it's this new coastal orientation we have, whether it's environmental remediation, fishing or fisheries, aquaculture, tourism, right? You want to put all that into the mix. Some of that will be advanced economy, led by research and development, led by STEM or STEAM workers, tech-enabled. Other will be more consumption-oriented economy sectors.
Meaning like the fishing and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. And particularly hospitality and tourism. So I think we're trying to, in collaboration with URI, in collaboration with folks like yourself, trying to take a common sense approach. This is generally how this research begins anyway. It's practitioner-led rather than, you know, theory or let out of the sort of an academy that's divorced from what's happening in the economy.
But so when you have different sectors like fishing and offshore right. wind, they clearly have some issues that they sort of interact around within the water. How do you make the case that they're both part of the same thing, or that they're part of the same innovation economy and can interact with each other? You know,
well, they're all oriented to some extent. This is where the puck is headed. Right, the UN has declared, the next decade is the decade of the oceans, for obvious reasons. And so all of these sectors obviously touch that. They either intersect because of technologies, or frankly because of the research and company base, which may be co-located and concentrated. So the intersections may occur across multiple dimensions. You don't really know until you dig deep. And because technology is changing so rapidly, to some extent, everything is tech-enabled. The only question is to what extent and how do you move to the next phase? Because we're talking about so many different kinds of sectors, where they may not interact with each other is in how they're capitalized, where financing comes from.
Sure.
As we saw with offshore wind in Rhode Island, the financing primarily came from Danish pension funds, you know, who have a long view of the green, clean economy, and have a very patient approach to investment, as opposed to, for the most part,
like VC,
the U.S.
Kind of
right. VC or other pensions in the United States. So I think what the first thing we're putting forward is by looking at different clusters separate, right, whether it's defense, whether it's maritime writ large, it's clear Rhode Island has a niche. And now what we want to do is aggregate up to a broader definition, which I think URI is trying to do. And then we'll be able, you know, in an iterative practitioner-oriented way, you know, roll in the mud, so to speak,
sure.
We'll figure out where are all those intersections and how do you leverage your position.
Well, so one stat we keep hearing about is that the global ocean economy, which is already worth allegedly $1.5 trillion,
right.
Could very well double in the
I think it's
next
a lot more than that, frankly.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, again, a lot of this is definitional.
Okay.
Once you start adding tourism in,
Sure.
Which you have to. I mean, I think you have to. So I think it's larger than that.
So, yeah. You know, I guess can you talk a little bit about, you know, why you think the opportunity for this kind of such rapid growth has emerged now for Blue Tech? And, you know, why is there the potential for this doubling?
Yeah, well, this is the Dolly Parton approach to economic development, right? Which is understand who you are and do it on purpose. So, declaring that the ocean state has a position in the blue economy is not a great reach. I mean, you obviously do. The question is, you know, which sectors, which segments, and where is technology and innovation in the technology sector is a critical component, and where is it sort of background noise, right? So there's an authenticity to this, which I think is very clear. I think it also touches a much broader segment of the Rhode Island population. You know, usually when you talk about advanced industry, a lot of times the response to that, which is unfair in many respects, is those are fancy jobs. You know,
like Silicon Valley kind of
Stuff, biomed innovation, you know. Actually, a large portion, which I think will be absolutely true in the blue economy, a large portion of advanced industry jobs, again, jobs that are driven by research and development and driven by STEM or STEAM workers, science, technology, engineering, math, the arts, design, are actually open to individuals who have credentials, perhaps out of a community college, perhaps out of an apprenticeship, rather than four-year degrees. So I think this fundamentally fits the perception of many Rhode Islanders, people who were born here, raised here. It fits their perception of what this economy actually is. So it doesn't look like someone coming from the outside and in a delusional fashion saying, you could be the next X. I mean, you know. Get a grip. This is very real here, and I think it touches a very broad segment of the population, either in their existing work or perhaps work they did in the past.
Okay.
I went to Camp Fuller, for example, and, you know, so key part of the blue economy. but just that experience of being here for 8 summers or so and experiencing what was happening along the coast, experiencing Block Island, that's what gives me a sense of this is much bigger across multiple dimensions, a continuum of jobs and occupations. And then, of course, you have University of Rhode Island. There's only so many oceanography universities in the world. You have one of the best. So it's so obvious. I'm beginning to wonder why we didn't really declare it back in 2016. But obviously the definitions were not in place to do so.
Well, I guess sort of more broadly. So, like, you know, while it is a fit with Rhode Island, like, you know, offshore wind is a brand new sector, but there's like a lot of industries within Blue Tech, like shipping and like fishing, that have been just done forever and have sort of survived with kind of low tech and are just recently starting to get like more, you know, digitization and upgrades and that kind of thing. And I guess, you know, a lot of these industries lagged behind for a long time and because they didn't really have to innovate. And I guess, why are they starting to innovate more now? And how are, you know, how are we getting into that?
Well, I think they're innovating because a whole series of technologies are coming online. So, you know, whether it's navigation technologies and so forth, it takes a period of time for next generation technologies to go from idea to lab to prototype to ubiquitous adoption. So there's a cycle here that is beginning to affect. Now, the military and what's happening with the development of the next generation submarines or with undersea's autonomous vehicles, whether it's at Newark or whether it's in this collaboration between URI and UConn, they're always going to be at the cutting edge, right? I mean, that's the nature of what they do. It's very advanced research, some of which we know about, a lot of which we don't. But for the civilian economy, what will affect the civilian economy is technological innovation in sectors which had never really been applied to the blue economy before. Now it's sweeping in. GPS, et cetera, right? Underseas mapping. I mean, these are technologies that may have been developed for different sectors, developed by the military, now getting commercialized and applied. So a lot of this is just the natural sequence the staging and sequence of technological innovation. Bottom line, this whole sector is about to be modernized. It already is being modernized, you know? And the question for Rhode Island is A, to maintain your position as a first mover because you have an incredible starting point, but then to take specific action that is more likely to secure your position. Because ultimately, when people understand the blue economy is real, like the clean green economy was 15 or 20 years ago, we began to really understand this is going to be a major transition. Buildings, energy efficiency, energy sourcing, transportation, remember, you know, EVs, you know, this is going to be a major transition for legacy sectors of the economy. We began to understand that 15 years ago. We're now there with the blue economy. So others will try to get in on this. And the question for Rhode Island is a small state.
It's like, where do we place our bets?
Yeah, where do you place your bets? But in some ways, this is not about winners and losers. You're already a winner. It's obvious. So the question then becomes, how do you double down? You know, one of the things we'll recommend in the report, there are these innovation campuses, which have been developed in the state around 195, the former 195 land, at URI, around ag tech. It is obvious that the blue economy and blue tech need to have a campus where different companies, researchers, investors could be co-located and concentrated, and then radiate out to different parts of the state. So there's, once you sort of go through this positioning, there's a number of strategies which, are commonsensical and could be adapted from other parts of the economy.
So, there's certain, I was going to use Rotterdam as an example, but there are certain ports that have like built hubs around blue tech already, and using some of the major resources and companies in their area. Can you talk a little bit about existing examples of that, that have bits and pieces of what Rhode Island might be based,
I think it's a great question. I think Rotterdam, you definitely need to be engaged with, and the Netherlands more generally speaking. So what Rotterdam has is one of the largest ports in Europe. It also is quite near one of the top engineering schools in Europe. So when I've gone to the Rotterdam Innovation District, Innovation Campus, there's a piece of it in the old port where you go in and it's all this tech innovation. A good portion about cleaning the oceans. Really quite interesting stuff. All developed out of the engineering school, gone to prototype, hopefully moving to mass production. So they've taken their national awareness of environmental pollution, right, and applied it in a tech-oriented way. Then you have the shipping and logistics industry. The same in Denmark because of Maersk, which is one of the largest shippers. So advanced logistics as a tech-enabled part of what these major companies and clusters do. And the last piece will be climate change is real, no matter what the hell the president says. Sea levels are rising. Holland is really the first mover on this. They were very engaged with New York after Hurricane Sandy. So there's a whole set of industries, occupations related to
building
coastal resilience.
Building up around sort of remediation kind of stuff? Or just sort of?
Mitigation, adaptation. How do we essentially not build in certain places or build in a particular kind of way? This hits the building community, hits architecture, design, everything, infrastructure. So the Dutch are the leads on this, and have been for quite some time, backed by large amounts of patient capital and smart national policy. We're not going to get necessarily smart national policy, but states can obviously operate and adapt the best innovations from around the world.
So what's kind of the role of like nonprofits and particularly those related to the ocean and climate change, as well as these sort of patient funds in like when it comes to building a blue tech hub like they did in Rotterdam? I mean, is that as the result of patient capital or is it?
Well, Rotterdam, like a large portion of Europe, is much more public led. The U.S. is a different model. Sometimes we're like a private-public nation, or public-private, or private-civic. So whoever has a pulse here, right? I mean, you know, we're a country, you know, that doesn't ask permission for anything. So I think what this is an incredible space for American-style innovation, both around product and around process. And so I think not the nonprofit sector already is and can play a bigger role in prodding, advocating, convening, in a way you've already set the course here for the public sector to begin to engage more broadly. Once the public sector acts as a catalyst, that's going to bring in even more private investment. So Europe operates differently. Europe, you know, tends to be more logical, linear, less chaotic. And particularly when you deal with some of the Scandinavian countries like Denmark, more consistent in their policy with long-term views about moving to zero carbon emission and what that means for a multiple group of sectors.
So do you think blue tech is fundamentally different than from other tech sectors, or are there philosophies or kind of ways that people have built up other tech hubs that can then be applied to blue tech?
Well, some of it's a little bit different because some of it really is related to military. So that's you won't see that. You might see that in Britain to some extent, but you won't see that in some of the other parts of Europe or even Asia. So the military part is a particular place where the U.S. has a competitive advantage, and actually that will spill over for civilian purposes. Offshore wind is also emblematic of how heavy some of this is dependent on production, manufacturing. You know, manufacturing is not dead, right? It still is a vibrant, highly productive, highly innovative sector in the global economy. Go to Germany, right? You'll see it. Go to bits of Denmark and so forth. So some of this harkens back to building a production ecosystem. And other bits are more like tech innovations, which again may originate in different parts of the economy around logistics, or and then get applied around sure. mapping sensors.
It's like AI or blockchain
exactly.
for this.
Or, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the smart bay concept of having a place where sensors and instruments can immediately ascertain changes in ocean flow and fishing, you know. I know a little bit more about this than I should because my older daughter is a wildlife ecologist.
Okay.
So I hear a lot. She lives up in Maine.
Works on ocean and works stuff,
well but? more tributaries, rivers, okay. Now bats. So I know a little bit more about this than an urbanist would naturally nice. Know about. So and it's so technology driven. And again, the application of sensors and instruments and longitudinal data, and then adapting policy intervention to what real-time research tells us.
So when you look at a state of like Rhode Island, which has had its share of misadventures
yeah.
when it comes to economic development over the years, how do you evaluate areas like blue tech where it makes sense to make bets like this? You know, when you sort of look at it from the outside, you start a report, you know, in the post 38 Studios era, you know, we're clearly, there's a lot of cynicism in Rhode Island about kind of, you know, it makes it hard for the public to make big economic bets. And so how can you sort of like turn the tide a little bit on like what you need to invest to get to where you want to go?
Yeah, sometimes I think Rhode Island needs a therapist more than an economic development plan, but that's a different story. There is a level of cynicism here, which is really quite pronounced, and I understand it, because prior to the current administration, I would say economic development was a frolic and a detour and dart throwing more than any evidence-driven. I do think what happened when we came in 2015, when I was at Brookings, is we were able to level set and basically say, look, we have a national look at advanced industries in the United States, 50 sectors, mostly manufacturing, some energy, some advanced services. Here's your niche. the facts don't lie. You can say you're great in X, Y, or Z, but the numbers don't show it. So we came back and said biomed and defense and shipbuilding and maritime and design, food, and custom manufacturing and IT and Internet of Things and advanced business services. That's the advanced industry in this state. Blue economy, to some extent, is an amalgam of some of those industries, and then plus other non-advanced industries like hospitality and tourism that, again, don't rely so much on high levels of research and development. So the blue economy is an amalgam. But I think what you've got to start is from real evidence, objective, independent, and then begin, as we've done more on the clean economy throughout the United States and the world, begin to see, as you described before, those intersections. Where can we see technology innovation? Again, in the U.S., this will be more chaotic than it'll be in other parts of the world. It tends to be a little more planned. I think that's why we're still so good at product innovation in the U.S. because, you know, we distribute it to the marketplace and to millions of people, as opposed to say we're just betting on this French style, you know, and let's check back in 5 years. I don't think this is a traditional industrial policy. This is starting from what you're good at.
Well, and also, so, you know, to build an ecosystem, you need like all these different players, these different stakeholders. There's the universities, there's the investors. Yeah. You need like little startups, but you need bigger companies also to kind of interact with them. How do you build all those up at once and in a thing like Blue Tech, where it's like you've got certain pieces of it, and how do you like create a thing where it's like, oh, this is a thing here, you know?
Well, once you name the sectors you're good at, right, what you're going to find is URI does X, let's say. There's a major company, particularly since defense is part of this. You got Electric Boat, Raytheon, General Dynamics, et cetera. Small and medium-sized enterprises on the tech side, startup scale-ups. Then the other sort of intermediaries, the accelerators, the incubators, the co-working space. Density really matters to this stuff. I mean, if you want to basically innovate, you want to have it within some...
And is that for partnerships or for sharing employees? Or
seamless exchange of innovation, thick labor markets, the sort of 2+2=5 effect when you begin to bring not just the engineers, so to speak, around particular innovation problems, but designers, marketers, financiers. I mean, you're really trying to build out a broader ecosystem. I think what has happened in this state over the past 4 years around biomed, defense, design in particular, textiles with Polaris, Manufacturing Extension Program, we see ecosystems emerging around real bits of the Rhode Island economy that allow this synergistic effect, an unpredictable effect, when you get universities and big companies and SMEs really connecting to each other. Before, this was like a foxhole economy. No one really connected to each other.
Meaning everyone's doing their own thing.
Everyone was just doing their own thing. And it was like a 2+2=3 effect. I think you're beginning to see that ramping up of potential by seamless, non-planned exchange of ideas that happened when you really see yourself as an ecosystem. You know, part of this in the U.S. is we had this notion that the lone genius would sit in their garage like Steve Jobs and just cook stuff up, and then whole economies would be transformed by that. Actually, most innovation occurs from the collective and from these ecosystems. So the places that don't really nurture, cement, and solidify their ecosystems are not going to move forward. And I think that's happening here.
So what are leaders in Rhode Island and elsewhere around the world doing to better position themselves at the forefront of blue tech? And what sorts of investments do you think have worked in other cities, in other states, in other countries?
I think several things sort of matter here. A, they're measuring their starting point, because how do you know if you're making progress if you don't know where you're starting? B, they're bulking up their R&D. And some of that's coming through national governments, some of that's coming through companies. It really depends on which sector you're in. In the military sector, obviously a lot will come from a national government, as it does here through DOD, Department of Defense. They're building their ecosystems. Some of that's being done through innovation campuses. This innovation district phenomenon is global. And if you're going to build a blue economy innovation hub in Rhode Island, a bunch of folks need to go look at Rotterdam to see what they're doing. Because
with like Port Excel, is that the kind of stuff?
Yeah, Port Excel, Cambridge Innovation Center, which is located in the 195 district in Providence, is also located in Rotterdam, which is quite interesting when you think about partnerships and sharing across these, you know, co-working spaces and so forth. And they're making investments, but the investments, depending on the country, may come either out of the public sector or might come out of pensions that are really looking long-term, or more. It depends on the transaction and the kind of investment being made. So, again, I think where we are in the blue economy is where we were on the clean or green economy, you know, 15 years ago. I think this is now coming into its own. And so what that means is we're going to have a lot of innovative effects, you know, both within companies, within clusters, in ecosystems. And there's probably going to be a small number of cities or city states that emerge as global leaders. And generally speaking, that's because they've set a vision of where they want to go. So it's crystal clear. I mean, the reason why Copenhagen is the host of C40, the climate mayors this year, is because Copenhagen will be the first major city in the world to go to zero carbon emissions by 2025. Most parts of the world say we're going to cut carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. And to tell you the truth, they don't know what the hell they're doing. Copenhagen is actually on target to reach zero carbon emissions by 2025. And so if Rhode Island wants to play in the blue economy, there are certain kind of in-game goals that you need to set and then strategies that enable you to get there in a relatively short period of time. That'll wake the world up. I mean, then you'll be, you know, really from a million population, 1.6 at the metro level, you'll be playing with the big boys.
So, like, you know, obviously you're familiar that General Dynamics Electric Boat recently signed the biggest contract in the history of the Navy, the history of the military, for $22 billion to construct 9 Virginia-class attack submarines. You know, obviously this is huge news on its own, but just a few years ago in 2014, Electric Boat CEO told Governor Raimondo that he was worried that there wasn't enough local talent and enough of an ecosystem. The state has made some steps in between to, you know, basically bring that up. And can you talk a little bit about what those steps were? I know it's included in your report in terms of kind of workforce development and that kind of stuff.
I think one of the most remarkable things, you know, in Rhode Island in the past 4 years is around Real Jobs Rhode Island, which is this integrated, aligned effort between career and technical education in the high schools, the Community College of Rhode Island, workforce development, a lot of that funded out of the federal government. The Rhode Island College, URI. You know, most states, when you go in and you say you have an advanced industry, whether it's around the military or whether it's around the civilian economy, they'll say, well, here's like one thing we're doing in the high schools. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, there's another thing going on over in the community college. This is actually integrated in Rhode Island. Now, again, it's because of your size. You can get everyone in one room. And you really can begin to align investments and priorities and initiatives. You're describing with Electric Boat is a piece of that. They need trained welders, electricians, technologists. Building the next class of submarines in this country.
Are there any sectors within the blue economy where there's kind of a dearth of talent around the world that, you know, we could start to think about exporting talent or creating, you know, workforce here that would then be, you know, valuable around the world?
I think the way to look at this is to think about what's going to happen with coastal resilience, climate change, and rising sea levels. So if you look at the Danes and the Dutch and the Germans to some extent, what they're exporting are services, right? They've built architecture firms, consultancy firms, you know, that are advising the rest of the world how to adapt to climate change or how to mitigate climate change. Portland is one of the few cities in the United States that their export strategy is called We Build Green Cities. And a lot of their, this is what enabled Portland to survive during the Great Recession. A lot of their firms went to work in Asia. So the question is, you know, however you want to brand your blue economy, it won't be We Build Green Cities, it's we repair broken oceans or whatever it is, yeah. Or we prepare ourselves for the tsunami that's coming. I think if you take steps from a policy perspective to truly embrace what's happening, that's going to create demand for new jobs. So some of the jobs that exist in the blue economy are predictable. We know what the military needs to build the next class of submarines. We know what has to happen with offshore wind to be either built, operated, and maintained. But really, I think the most interesting thing about the blue economy is when we really begin to adapt to climate, that's going to create an enormous amount of jobs and require incredible expertise. And the question is whether this state, along with the Dutch and some others, could be at the vanguard of that. Now, that's going to require your universities, your schools, K through 12, to begin to adapt to that. But that's coming. You want to always skate to where the puck's going. Climate change is real, and whichever place in the U.S. adapts first is going to find itself with a first mover.
So is this like expertise in the tech of building seawalls and that kind of stuff?
It can include literally where you build, how you build. So it's going to affect architecture. It's going to affect home building. It's going to affect zoning. It's going to affect land use. It's going to just cut across whole segments of the real estate market, whether it's residential or whether it's commercial or whether it's industrial. I mean, the U.S. has been a laggard in this, to tell you the truth. The southern states, because of hurricanes, have begun to embrace it, adapt to it. But they don't have necessarily the R&D chops. They don't necessarily have a URI to be a platform, for example. And they don't have a real jobs Rhode Island to begin to train the workforce. So I think, you know, we're still early days on this. It's not like, you know, we declare blue economy is a focus, you know, we do the victory lap. And I think if this is going to require sophisticated work and sustained focus over time. And then that'll iterate in ways. And you're going to find partners around the world that, frankly, you didn't know. We know about the Dutch because it's obvious. They are the leader in this. But there are other parts of the world, whether it's research institution companies or capital that's out there that's more patient than typical American capital that may find, well, Rhode Island seems like it's the first place to come to engage with the blue economy.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Blue Economy Podcast brought to you by Rhode Island, the Ocean State. And thanks again to Bruce Katz of New Localism Advisors for taking the time. You can learn more about the pod and subscribe online at blueeconomypodcast.com. That's www.blueeconomypodcast.com. I'm David Hirschman. Thanks for listening. See you next time.